Okay, so welcome to another episode of Big Fish Radio. This is your captain speaking, Captain Barry. I'm joined with Robert, one of the co-hosts, Robert, the manager at Fishing Franks, and also another employee, Alex, Alexandra B. Fishin.
Yeah, I'm a girl, Alexandra.
And today's topic is we're going to be talking about big snook. And by big snook, we're talking, what, 36 and over or 40 and over, Robert?
36.
36 and over, that's pretty stud fit snook. So we're going to be talking about big snook from shore and specifically the jetties. So okay.
What's a jetty?
Great question. Robert, would you like to explain what a jetty is?
It's a big rock pile.
On a playground?
It's usually a rock pile that is at the entrance to the intercoastal or ICW. Basically, it's the entrance to a main channel coming usually off the beaches. Right. And the boulders are anywhere from 2 foot around to 8 feet around, and they're piled very high and in some areas very long.
Considering the name jetty, I'm going to assume that they jut out.
Yep, that's exactly it. Some of them will go up to a quarter mile offshore.
Wow.
In some areas.
Wow. Like, I know near us up in Venice, there's like a very nice jetty on the north and south side. Mm-hmm. And that's like the entrance to like the huge, what would you call it?
I don't know. Intercoastal.
There we go. ICW.
Intercoastal, intracoastal, or ICW.
And we also have one here locally in Boca Grand Pass. There's one right in front of the lighthouse, correct?
Correct.
Where else can we find these jetties, like in the state of Florida?
Well, they're pretty much found all over the entire state because the intracoastal is actually part of what basically puts the barrier islands from, you can go in the intracoastal from Texas all the way up, I believe, to Massachusetts.
Yeah, yep.
It was a way of basically having protected water for safe passage while...
For a ship, right?
For a ship, mm-hmm. And they also did it from the military perspective of being able to protect our shorelines, was the original intent, I believe. I'm not a historian, that's what Frank is for, but pretty sure that's what it was about. But nowadays, you can travel a long ways down through protected waters. There's areas where it just ends and you have to go out into the main body of water, be it the Gulf or the Atlantic, and then you can sneak back into the protected waters with short distances out. But even Lake Okeechobee is technically part of the intracoastal, because if you leave from here and go to Fort Myers, you go up to Caloosahatchee and cut across Lake Okeechobee and you come out of I believe it's Ponce Inlet, which is in between Jupiter and Stewart, I think.
I think so. I believe so. Don't quote me on it.
Basically, it's a halfway point of the state. You cut straight across the state and come out on the Atlantic side, and then you can go north.
Wow.
So, and with these jetties are meant to protect boats, but from, overbearing seas with the wind and everything.
The intercoastal is. The jetties are actually to protect the safe passage for that channel to not get eroded in by Mother Nature.
Nature's elements, right. The natural elements. But with that being said, with all the current flow and wind, that also can break down the water and slow the movement so that way bigger fish can prey on other fish moving in, right? That's a big hangout.
Yeah, the rocks provide a lot of structure and habitat for every part of the food chain.
Exactly. Everything from the... Because everything like seaweeds and all that will actually grow on those rocks. Mm-hmm. And then with that come the little crustaceans, and it's just... It can become its own little ecosystem.
Right. And because it's such a huge volume of water being pushed out or pushed in, because it's generally a channel.
Mm-hmm.
It can be anywhere from 100 yards wide up to a half a mile wide in some instances. And that still produces a whole lot of water cranking through there.
Wow. And so since we're specifically talking about big snook, let's start talking about like the tackle that we're going to need to tackle these big snook from these jetties. What do you like to recommend, Robert?
Usually because of the area where you're having to stand, because it can be pretty sketchy walking around on those giant rocks, because uh-huh. there's there's usually some type of flat walkway across the top, but in order to fish it, you usually have to step off of that stable flat walkway mm-hmm. on top mm-hmm. and get down and find yourself a relatively flat stable rock to cast from. Mm-hmm. And that can get a little sketchy. So me personally, I'm using what I would consider tarpon gear. You know, I'm using an 8 foot long yep. spinning rod. Yep. Fairly heavy action in, like, say, a 20 to 40 pound class rod with a large spinning reel that is holding 50 or 65 pound braided line on it.
Yeah. You are, like, literally, that's exactly what I've used on the. That's crazy. I wish I had something new to add to that, but that's exactly what I would
use. Some of your larger bait casters will work too, but I think the main reason why is it you would prefer the 8 foot rod over anything else?
The 8 foot rods, it's so I can just get the distance. I can cover more area. Whether I'm casting, mainly because I love casting artificials the most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're lifting a fish or like trying to get him, when you get him close, you have more opportunities to go around a rock with a longer rod. If you need that,
I think that's the most crucial point, right?
You have more control to keep him out of structure.
Yeah, or like more
under your feet.
Right, more opportunity to go around a structure. If he's near you and he's digging around a rock, you can kind of like go around it.
Well, you can lean out and extend your arm out, and the rod being longer, you're able to try to help keep that line from getting bounced off of a rock and abrading up against the rock and breaking you off. Or hopefully being able to, as you're bringing that fish close to you, and he wants to try to charge straight at you into the rock, sometimes having enough line, the line tight enough up on him and extending your arm out that 30 inch reach, which most of us have as normal sized human beings, adding that to your 8 foot rod, you're now able to extend out basically 11 feet
exactly,
and hopefully turn that fish from wanting to dive into any cracks or crevices or anything like that
in the final moments. Yep.
It just gives you a lot, you know, a longer rod has less leverage, so it's a harder fight for the for you against the fish, but being able to have that longer rod gives you that ample leverage or hopefully to stop that fish from getting into your structure and wrecking you.
Man, Alex is so intense with how much she's listening and learning. Like,
oh, I've got so much to say.
I know.
First of all, it should be a medium heavy to heavy fast action.
I think having a faster tip on it, but it doesn't have to be extra fast, but something with a little bit of a softer tip on it, but you definitely want a heavier action rod. Mm-hmm. Because you're fishing for a larger fish, you mm-hmm. know, and snook is basically a largemouth bass on steroids. But not only do you have a strong, bigger fish, because an average 36-inch snook is going to say, on average, be about 15 pounds, give or take.
Mm-hmm.
But you're also fighting the current that is ripping through that area, because those jetties, like we said earlier, are a bottleneck where the water is tide is coming in or going out, and it's a huge volume of water pushing out a narrow little neck, so it's not uncommon for that water to be ripping 4 to 8 miles an hour. I mean, essentially, you're fishing for a largemouth bass, but in the scenario of like you're fishing for steelhead salmon in Alaska.
Right, I mean, exactly.
That current is just really cranking.
And this is a little side note, but I feel like the snook that you will battle on these high current places, like a jetty, are going to be stronger and fight harder than the ones that you find, like, for instance, in the harbor and, like, not so much, they're not fighting as much current.
They haven't built up that endurance.
Exactly. So you're going to be fighting stronger fish on these. So you need, I know one, for instance, one rod that I've used a lot is that, and I have no affiliation with any of these brands, but the Shimano Extra Extra Heavy 20 to 40 Terramar.
Right.
That one's like a pretty solid rod to really put the meat to a fish, or like the Star Paraflex 8 foot. It's like 80 to something. It's like a ridiculous line rating.
Yeah, well, it's kind of got a jigging rating on it.
Yeah,
you know, even though it's an 8 foot rod or 7.5 foot rod, it's still, they classify it as a jigging rod, so they've got the braid ratings on it, which is like you said, ridiculous.
Like 80 to 150. Yeah. So, what else you got, Alex? What else is brewing up there?
I don't think you need that heavy a tackle.
You don't think so?
No.
What do you think?
I used my Penn Passion 3000, and I've slayed fish. Huge fish.
What size?
On a jetty?
No.
Well, and here's the thing, is that there's always those moments to land those large fish on that lighter tackle.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But
To have the best chance
of landing that with the most success rate, that,
you know, it's not necessary, and I think that's important to say.
Sure.
True. Yeah, 100%.
Sure.
We're not saying it can't be done on, you know, an inshore setup from a jetty at all. We're just trying to say what are going to be their best.
Line up the perfect scenario.
Right.
And you do want the heavier tackle to...
Yes.
To have the best chance of muscling him.
Exactly. Yeah, anytime you're fishing for any species of fish, like if you've got it in your heart and soul to catch the largest of that species, you want to have the most practical tackle for that specific animal that you're targeting. Even though the average size snook in Southwest Florida is only about 5 pounds, you're looking for that 15 to 25 pound fish. You're looking for that once in a lifetime fish.
Exactly.
So if you're doing it in that scenario, you want to try to go into it with the most.
You want to go to your battle.
Positive, best to your abilities to catch that fish.
You want to go into battle with a gun, not a knife.
Pretty much. Even though the majority of what you're going to catch is going to be smaller.
Yeah.
But having some of these techniques of the rod, the reel, and the leader, we also miss too, because really you should be throwing a bare minimum of a 60-pound to 80-pound fluorocarbon leader. Not steel, but using a heavy monofilament or preferably fluorocarbon will help extremely well, because the fluorocarbon is very abrasion resistant compared to the braided line that you might be throwing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't even remember where I was going with it at that point. But
no, I was going to ask, like, why do you recommend fluorocarbon over the mono?
In clear water, it will absolutely make a difference, and those large fish did not get big being dumb.
Exactly.
But also with your smaller rod and reel, you tend to throw smaller lures, but for this scenario, we're going to be throwing extremely larger lures. And to control that lure and work it properly, you need that bigger rod with that heavier line, that heavier leader, to get it to function properly. Plus, like you said earlier on a different episode, big bait, big fish. In this instance, we're hoping that's very much true.
Right, we're going to hope we weed out through all the smaller things, because we're only going to throw larger baits, whether it be natural baits or artificial, and you wouldn't be able to throw those on a smaller setup, like a 3,000 size reel with a 7 foot rod rated from 8 to 17 pounds, for instance. So,
right. So what would you be throwing for an artificial for this?
From my personal experience, the top two that I would throw are going to be, no affiliation with these brands, is number one, a chartreuse bomber. And the long A, the one with the three hooks. But I would replace those treble hooks with a single inline on the front and on the back. You don't need that middle, because we're strictly catch and release here. I don't want to hurt the fish too much. That's number one.
No, that's the large bomber. That's like, I believe, the 16 series, which I think is like 6.5 inches long, I believe.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes,
Are you removing that middle treble?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're just in line front and back.
Right, because when these snook hit it, especially these big snook, they can inhale the whole lure in one shot. Like, you're gonna hook up well. So, and I don't want to have 9 hooks and a fish that I want to release. But that's number one. And number two are some sort of bucktail, whether it be a Gulfstream or a Skyline jig, something in that, depending on the current situation, you want it like anywhere from an ounce and a half to maybe 2 ounces, depending on the depth or the strength of the current. Those are my top two lures when I'm fishing a jetty.
Right, absolutely. And I think you hit it right on the head with being that ounce to even sometimes in some instances up to 4 ounces in some areas, depending on how hard that tide can be ripping. If you're fishing it during a full moon and you've got an extremely strong tide, a 3 or 4 ounce might be the more practical way to get it down towards the bottom, because those fish are going to sit more towards the bottom when you've got that really, really strong current. Whether it's daytime or nighttime, those fish are going to settle more towards the bottom, because remember, it's just, you know, the jetties basically are creating a river. So that bottom contour of that river changes a lot. It's got different little washboard spots where the bottom comes up a little bit with sand and creates a hump or a hill that the water is deflecting over. So sometimes those fish are sitting on one side or the other of that hump, or where it might create an underwater eddy that creates a calmer spot in that bottom so they can get out of that really strong current. And that's where fishing that lure right on the bottom is as close as possible. But when you're throwing that bomber, how are you approaching that with that bomber? Because that's just essentially a lipped bait that will dive down 2 to 5 foot depending on your speed or your current involved.
Right. That's a good question. I use that in the towards like the shore.
When you're paralleling the rocks, basically.
Exactly. When it's too shallow, basically, to throw a jig, if that makes sense, because it's a little, it's going to be in that 4 to 6 foot range. Not too shallow, but it's just more efficient to swim a lure that's going to go about 2 to 3 foot below the surface. And it's just a different action. I've done very well with that, throwing it parallel to shore and just a moderate retrieve, nothing crazy.
Okay.
Even at night, pitch black, yeah, it will thump it.
Oh, yeah. And so that's a pretty good thing to know about, like a lure, especially because normally snook are associated with structure. They're very much an ambush predator, sit and wait for them to come. So that's why fishing on the bottom around those washboard bottoms with some type of lure that's going to get down deep, or if you're going to retrieve a lipped bait or something that suspends somewhat in the water column, very seldom, unless the water is very shallow and you've got a slower current, are you going to cast that lipped bait out in the middle of the channel to try to fish for those snook? Because they're, you know, if it's 10 feet deep or 15 feet deep and that current's ripping 6 knots, those fish aren't usually going to come up off the bottom to hit that lure. But the snook that are sitting off to the side by those rock piles getting out of the current are going to come up and crush that bait.
Yeah.
So you're saying to cast out into the middle and not cast up or down into the current?
Well, with a lipped plug, I'm going to cast mainly parallel along the rocks. I won't cast it out in the middle to retrieve it back.
Hmm. And are you going to bring it back with the current or against the current?
Usually I'm going to bring it back with going against the current.
You like it against the current?
So coming from behind the snook who is facing into the current?
Correct.
Okay.
Really?
Just because it's easier to control most of the time.
Yeah.
Not because it's the right way to do it, because those fish are always facing into the current.
Right.
But it's very, very hard to figure out your
retrieve. Yeah.
When you're reeling a bait, trying to keep up with your slack, keep up with that lure, but still get that lure to work properly and wobble right while pulling it along with the current going out.
Yeah.
So in a lot of instances, what I'll do is I'll take that lip plug, cast it down current, be retrieving it facing into the current the same way the fish are. But I'm going to experiment with my retrieve. And one thing I always remember with any lure that I always try to remember is pause. Pause is like the most underutilized action in any lure, hands down. Mm-hmm. And when I'm bringing that lure back into the current, I'm retrieving 4 or 5 good cranks and then maybe 1 or 2 very slow cranks. Then I'm going to sit there and let it pause, because there's enough current ripping. That lure is going to have some pretty good hang time where it's just going to sit completely still in that one spot before it wants to slowly try to float back up, because a bomber is a floating lure.
It is. It is.
But when it's got enough pressure, which most instances in those jetties, it's not going to come all the way to the surface. There's just too strong of a current. As long as you're keeping your line tight, it'll always stay under the water a little ways. And getting that hang time gets it into maybe an area where I've heard a fish pop.
Right.
Or I saw a fish sitting up against the rocks. I can cast down and go, okay, I just cast it 10 feet past where that snook was sitting or where he just came up and blew up on a bait of some kind. I can retrieve it back through and go, okay, this should be about where he's at, and then I'll pause that lure and let it sit for a minute. and I might even let it sit and then do one or two hard twitches, and then I'll bring my rod back downstream following the line, letting the line go a little bit slack so that lure darted forward, lost control, and started to go backwards a little bit, and try to keep it in that spot for some hang time for a little bit more before I continue retrieving
right,
back.
Right, because you can get like a reaction bite out of a snook. If he's following it, twitch in front of him, and then you stop it and let it swing back towards him in his face, he might just eat it out of just reaction.
Right,
so
exactly.
So if you have one following, that's why I agree with you, especially on a pause. It's very underutilized because especially snook, it happens a lot. They'll track a lure, kind of like a muskie for people up north, and then if you stop it, they can't really stop on a dime. They'll like kind of run into it and just eat it out of just a reaction.
Absolutely.
So,
I'm in agreement with you with the bomber and the bucktail. Those are going to be my personal two favorite choices for.
Oh, really? I was going to ask. Are there any other recommendations you would have?
The only other recommendation that I would have would be a large swim bait.
What's large to you?
6 to 10 inches.
Yeah.
Whether it be like the Savage Mullet.
Mm-hmm.
Even Gambler makes a really large swim bait that I'm going to put a very large 2 to 3 ounce jig head in and work it along. But the reason why I kind of like the swim bait over a bucktail is with the swim bait, I can make that 3 lures in 1.
Because you can insert different plastics on a jig head, or what do you mean by 3 lures?
How I work it. I can work it extremely slowly and let that jig head pull it right to the bottom and just drag it. Because a lot of your jetty areas have just sandy, washboardy type bottom. They occasionally have the big boulder out there that screws you up, or a shopping cart or something. But for the most part, it's fairly clean bottom where I can just really slowly drag or slow roll that bait right along the bottom. Or I can do a moderate retrieve, keeping it up maybe what I would assume to be a foot or two off the bottom,
okay,
but still relatively close. Or I can parallel it down along the jetty and crank it at a fairly fast rate. The only drawback to that is I can't do what I can do with that bomber of pause it and let it flow back, because as soon as you pause it, it wants to sink right to the bottom.
Exactly.
But at least I can cover all 3 areas up with the water column with that.
Right.
So that's what makes it really nice. And, it's those are still going to be probably the 3 most sought-after baits for as far as artificial lures go when targeting the snook around those jetties, whether it's daytime or nighttime. But I do find that nighttime is a lot better for those larger snook around those jetties because of the boat traffic and foot traffic involved, but you can still fool them during the daytime.
Yeah, I feel like Alex is absorbing all of this. She's looking so intently at us, like right now.
I did not participate because I wanted to absorb it all.
Yeah, she's absorbing everything. She's going to re-listen
to
this.
Yeah, but you had some really good, interesting questions that makes it worthwhile asking and for us to try to remember to answer. Sometimes we forget these things.
Well, we're out of time.
I'm a huge fan of the X-Wrap. I just wanted to add that in.
You know what? We'll carry that over because we're out of time on this episode. We're going to talk about snooks on the jetties, big ones, in the next episode. And until then, this is Captain Barry, Alexandra B. Fishin', and Robert Mandrit Fishin' Franks. We'll see you in the next episode.